It's Monday night at Milwaukee Deli, a quaint beer and pizza joint at 9th and Baltimore. Adam Smith is bartending. That's his day job. Maybe his night job, I guess. There are only a few guests here, regulars, close friends of Adam's. And tonight they're talking shop, that is, comic books. See, Adam is a comic book writer. Matt Fox is here, too. He's Adam's creative partner, the artist of the duo. But as for the amount of work that they actually accomplish at the bar?
None. Yeah.
Adam occasionally takes a notebook to work with him. Matt will sometimes bring a sketchbook.
I come here and I'll do sketches, just like messing around. But if I'm trying to do a good job, I actually need to have a space where I can make a mess and focus.
Comics and graphic novels are being made all over Kansas City, sometimes in a bar, sometimes, like for these two, after work at home. This is KCUR Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, and Adam Smith and Matthew Fox are now here in the studio. Good morning, you two.
Morning. Good morning.
Glad you're here. And Adam, like we said, you're the writer. Matthew, you're the illustrator, although I know there's kind of a back and forth even about all of that. You've now got a full-length graphic novel that's been out for about a year, Long Walk to Valhalla. And I want to go back, though. How did you two meet each other, Adam?
We met at a comic shop I worked in Sherwood, Arkansas. I worked Sundays for store credit. And
okay.
Matt came in during the week one day while I was gone. He was talking to the owner who saw the books that Matt had bought and recommended he meet the Sunday guy because he was also into indie comics. And Matt came up next week after, and that was it. Yeah.
Matt, were you already drawing comics at that point?
No, not really. I'd actually only kind of just decided that I was going to do comics. I think I'd done a one-page comic, and I brought that up to him as sort of my application to make comics with
him. It
was
the jellyfish one, right?
Yeah.
Was it strictly sort of a professional introduction, like maybe you guys could work together, or was it more we could be friends?
Best friends,
yeah. I don't know. I don't know the motivation to go in. I just kind of wanted to make comics, and I was terrified that I wouldn't be a good writer. So I'd heard that there is this guy who likes the same kind of comics I do and wants to write them, so I thought that might be perfect.
And Adam, were you only a writer, or did you draw as well?
I drew when I was much younger, but I had stopped probably in my mid-20s because I realized I was only drawing to get to the writing part. Everything was super rushed just to get to that point, and I wasn't good either. Like, it took me a really long time to do something not even close to what Matt does in 10 minutes. And so I should really, really try to be good at one of these. And so I started focusing on writing.
So you said when you were much younger. How old are you now?
I'm 34.
Okay. How old are you, Matt?
31.
Okay. So where did you guys grow up? Where did this all happen?
I spent about half my life in Connecticut and half of it in Arkansas growing up. Probably most of my formative years were in Arkansas from about late teens on. And we actually lived probably about 40 minutes away from each other. And the comic book shop was actually pretty much dead in the middle between the both of us. So, yeah, that's me.
Yeah. My dad was in the Air Force, so we moved around a lot. But he retired in Arkansas when I was like 12. And so I spent like 12 on there.
So what age were you guys then when this meeting happened and your creative partnership began?
I think I was 25, going on 26.
Yeah, so I would have been 28, 29.
Yeah.
And how was being from Arkansas, a meeting in Arkansas, and having life there influential on the work that you would eventually then do with making comics?
Well, specifically with this one, the whole thing takes place in Arkansas.
The book that we'll talk about here in a little bit, Long Walk to Valhalla,
right.
Was that a place that was a naturally conducive place to kind of going into a room and writing and drawing and telling a story, or could that be anywhere?
Now it can be anywhere, just because, you know, because of the internet, you can work with someone, you know, on the other side of the world if you want to collaborate that way. Right. It just kind of worked out that we lived in the same state. So, you know, we would get together at the comic book shop and, you know, talk about, you know, what we were working on, what we wanted to do. And then Adam would go off and write his portion. And then I'd go off and draw my part.
How'd you end up in Kansas City?
We wanted to be closer to a comic book scene. And so we were thinking about going to Austin because we had done our first convention when we printed this 8-page short story called Mule. We went to Staple, which is a self-publishing con in Austin, and we had a really good time. We met some really great people, and whenever we were trying to decide where to go next, we were like, oh, well, Austin was awesome, but I don't think it ever, like, super clicked for us. There was never that pressing, yeah, let's go now, let's leave right away. And a friend of ours recommended Kansas City, so we came up to visit, and we did have that click of, yeah, let's go there.
It's interesting to hear you say that we wanted to go somewhere where there was an awesome comic book scene, and so you came to Kansas City.
Right.
Not something I knew.
Yeah, neither did we. Yeah, we kind of had no idea that this was sort of an art scene gem in the middle of the country. But yeah, a friend of ours who actually was from Austin, he kind of talked us down from Austin. It was like, you know, in the 80s, it was really great, but now it's kind of, the scene's a little slow. But he had known a couple of people just through Twitter, actually, from Kansas City, and they'd, you know, met up at shows. But there were just a handful of these guys from Kansas City that make comics ranging from self-published to, you know, working for the big two. So there was like this really
the
great...
The big two, Marvel.
Oh, yes, and Marvel and DC, sorry. Yeah, so there's a nice eclectic mix of creators in this town, and it's a really vibrant scene.
Well, I want to introduce another person who's part of that scene here in Kansas City, Kelsey Roten. Good morning, Kelsey.
Good morning.
She's a freelance illustrator herself, but you also taught a summer course this year at the Kansas City Art Institute, I understand.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry.
It's all right. Talking about graphic novels, about comics?
Yeah, I taught a graphic novels class to 14 to 18-ish year olds at KCAI, yeah.
Well, give us a little taste of some of what you taught. How did graphic novels get started? Maybe we even need to have you define what that is.
Well, I mean, in my class, what I was kind of, you know, saying that they were would be like any sort of long form, like storytelling. It didn't have to be like comics per se, but any sort of like long form, like series of images that tell some sort of narrative. So
you might think of it as a longer version of a comic book.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it's simply put, yeah.
But. Okay. But comic book, as we sort of said in the introduction of the show, might conjure up a variety of images involving superheroes and gritty metropolis, but graphic novels can be very diverse, right?
Yeah, they can. I was talking about anything from, like, hieroglyphics to these, like, expressionist German woodcut, like, graphic novels that were done during the 1920s up until Will Eisner in the 70s, which is who popularized the term graphic novel.
Yeah, talk to me about Will Eisner. What did he write? What was this work that was so groundbreaking?
A Contract with God was the name of the graphic novel that kind of popularized the term. The term already exists before this book came out, but it was one of the first books that was actually marketing itself as a graphic novel. Before then, there were all these disparate, like, terms that were floating around, but this is the one that stuck, and this is the book that it stuck on.
What was it about?
It was about living in a tenement in, like, what was it? I think it was, like, the 1930s?
Yeah,
I don't 1930s. Know. Yeah.
Yeah, which sounds a little different than it's not a superhero story.
No, no.
What sensibility do you think graphic novels tend to appeal to? Are they for kids? Are they for adults? What's the audience?
I feel like it ranges now. I feel like at first they were probably more geared towards an adult audience because I feel like it was kind of reactionary towards like the mainstream comics, which were geared more towards like a younger audience and were like kind of restricted in that way that they had to be like okay for younger audiences. So the graphic novels and underground comic scene kind of pushed themselves maybe away from that at first, or at least that's my opinion.
Some of them were very decidedly not for younger
audiences.
Yeah,
definitely not.
Because of the subject matter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Adam and Matt, I guess I'm curious how you go from having drawn a one-page comic once, Matt, yeah. When you guys met, and Adam having drawn when you were a kid, basically, but now focusing on writing, to saying, you know, we should get together and write a 140-page graphic novel. How did that happen?
First, you write an 8-page short story, okay. Which is what we did. Like Adam was saying, it was the first thing we'd ever done together. It was just a short little sci-fi comic that we self-published. And honestly, the book we did, Long Walk, was going to be longer, but it was only going to be about 12 pages when we first started out. He had actually when we met, he had emailed me like this list of short stories, little PDF files that I could read, you know, the premise for each one. And the two that I liked the most were the first one that we did, Mule, and then the premise for Long Walk.
Well, I mean, let's talk about even something shorter like Mule. I mean, what's the process? It starts with you, Adam, developing a written down idea for a story?
Yeah, I think everyone works different in comics, and just the way Matt and I have evolved in working together in comics has changed. With Mule, I think it was mostly in prose, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. There weren't a whole lot of panel breakdowns.
Yeah, and then with Long Walk, we kind of started slowly adding panel breaks as the story grew, especially. The whole book
and
changed.
By panel breaks, you mean what?
So typically a comic script will say something like page one, panel one, and then they'll describe what's going on in the panel. And then if there's dialogue or character speaking, they'll write that. And then it says panel two, mm-hmm. and then another description.
And is
whatever.
That all the writer's job, your job, or where does the illustrator sort of step into that creative process?
I think if you're writing by yourself, kind of not knowing where it's going, that's typically how it's done. Mm-hmm. But with Matt now, I mean, I'll still break stuff up into panels, but he will change whatever he sees fit. Like, he's better at that than I am. So if I write something and he thinks it's going to work better a different way, it always does. Like, there's never been a thing where I was like, dude, you really need to go back to how I had it written. It's always better.
Do you agree with that assessment, Matt?
Yeah, for the most part. But I mean, there were also times when I would come up with something and he would stop me and be like, you're going away from, you know, what we're trying to do with this page or what I'm trying to do with this character. So at that point, it really was just, we never really argued a lot. There were a few points where we thought, you know, something different should be happening, but our motto was kind of who cared more deeply about it, mm-hmm. which turned into whose voice got the loudest.
Yeah, who argued the hardest.
Yeah.
The other one would be like, whoa.
Who shed the most tears.
Yeah. At that point, you know, it shut down and it was like, okay, yeah, we'll go with that. You care a whole lot about
as
that.
Soon as the first one to break down crying wins.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good. What? How many hours a day are you guys typically spending working on a project like this?
Oh, man, a lot.
Because you're working regular jobs as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Both of you.
Uh-huh. Pretty much every time you're not at work, like, you take a couple hours to unwind and decompress. But for the most part, if you're, you know, really trying to make an earnest effort into getting a comic done, you're working on it until it's done.
Which is all the more true because you guys are roommates, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to be lazy when Matt knows it's like, I don't hear typing.
Yeah, and I can't really be watching TV if I've got, you know, a script in my inbox and he's in the other room.
So I guess I'm curious then, do you ever get tired of working on this?
Oh, there are definitely points, you know, at like 3 a.m. When you worked 9 hours that day and you're about 8.5 hours into working that night and you're just kind of going a little crazy and you think you might not be able to make it through the night. But, I mean, you can't really listen to that feeling.
Well, we're going to take a break, and in a moment we'll dig into Matt Fox and Adam Smith's book, Long Walk to Valhalla. We'll have more conversation about the graphic novel and its place in Kansas City's arts culture. We'll also invite you to share your experience of comics around Kansas City. I'm Brian Ellison. Stick around for more of KCUR Central Standard in just a minute. It's KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're talking about graphic novels and how they're developing, including here in Kansas City. Are you a fan of comics or graphic novels? What's your experience of the comic creation scene here in Kansas City? We'd love to hear from you. You can join the conversation at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. We'd love to hear your questions or comments. Kelsey Roten is here. She's an illustrator herself. She teaches a summer course for high schoolers about all this at Kansas City Art Institute. And Adam Smith and Matt Fox are here. They're the authors of Long Walk to Valhalla. That was a finalist for the 2016 Eisner Award. Kelsey, what is the Eisner Award anyway?
Well, I mean, we started talking a little bit about Will Eisner earlier. The Eisner Award is pretty much the comics Oscar. That's what I always like refer to it as. And it's an award that's, is a, I mean, I think that these guys would probably be able to talk about the ceremony a little bit better than me because they went to it. But there's a vast range of different, you know, categories, just like the Oscars. And yeah, it's just kind of a thing that you really strive to get.
Is it too much of a stretch to say it's the Oscars of
that's what I was
novels?
Saying. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, let me ask you guys, Adam and Matt, what is Long Walk to Valhalla about, Adam?
It's about this dude named Rory who's leaving a small town in Arkansas when his car breaks down. And he meets this young girl named Sylvia that says she's a Valkyrie that's going to take him to Valhalla because he's going to die later today.
Oh, is that all?
Well, yeah,
all right. And so, Matt, where'd you guys get the idea for a book like this?
Well, like I said, he'd sent me a bunch of shorts and
So you chose this together from among other possibilities.
Right. Yeah. I just really loved the idea of this. At that point, it really was just a little girl coming up to a guy saying that she was a Valkyrie and he was going to die that day. And that just, you know, grabbed me. And so it started off very simple like that. The story was very much just about the two of them and about 12 pages of them walking down a street. And so we started making it and, you know, we just started adding more and more to it. We added more about his brother, growing up with his brother. And that kind of changed the whole focus of the story to where it wasn't about the main character and this little girl. It was about the main character and this brother who we don't actually see in present day for most of the book.
How much of this story is something that could only be told because of your Arkansas roots that the two of you share?
I think it feels like Arkansas. One of the most kind things I heard about the book was from someone who had gone to college there, and she said that the whole book felt humid and damp.
Huh.
And I always liked that. I was like, man, Matt can really draw. That's really kind of what we were going for, is we wanted it to feel like where we were. I remember reading this interview with Jeff Nichols, who's also from Arkansas, and he wrote and directed Shotgun Stories and Take Shelter and Mud and Midnight Special. This is his newest one. But he said whenever he first started writing screenplays, he was doing these crime stories in New York, and his dad told him he didn't know anything about New York, so why was he writing that?
Yeah.
And he switched his focus to writing Shotgun Stories, which was about a bunch of brothers in Arkansas. And watching that movie feels authentic, and that was something we wanted to make, was something that felt authentic to where we were writing it.
Authentic, but also he meets a Valkyrie, and there's characters who see things that, without giving away too much of the plot, things that may or may not be there, things that maybe would be harder to do certently on a stage or even with video, you can do in a graphic novel.
Yeah, I think that there's a certain suspension of disbelief in comics that you might not be able to get with movies, especially with the kind of stuff that we did with this one, because there are these creatures that could be imaginary or real. But I don't know that if it was done with live action, if the two would mix well together, because it's mm-hmm. almost very childlike in their representation. So yeah, I think that there are certain things you can do with comics where the reader can accept it and just move on and go with you on that story.
There are things that I think must be very challenging to convey in a drawn fashion. I'm thinking especially the way people interact, maybe two people who are having a tender moment or a confused moment. How do you go about that, Matt, when you're trying to convey emotion when all you've got is the pen and the paper?
Honestly, Adam makes it really easy for me to get a read of the characters, even with just their dialogue. And we got to a point where there was very little direction about what was going on with the characters. I was just reading what they were saying and what they were doing. And I could kind of just feel like what they needed to do. And so it wasn't terribly difficult, because I think Adam writes in a way, not necessarily of people constantly expressing their feelings, but maybe trying to withhold their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do that visually, then I don't know, I think it comes off a lot more authentic.
It's interesting to see the way that sometimes there's panel after panel that doesn't have any words, but something is being conveyed.
Yeah, and I think that that's one really great thing about comics is that people connect with other people, and we have a really good ability that we've gained to read body language and read expressions. And so doing that with comics, you know, it's fairly easy. If you've had those feelings, then as long as you can sort of represent that, then people will pick up on it.
Adam, have you written things, just written pieces that are not
prose?
For comics? Yes, yeah, regular prose. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, I used to a lot when I was younger, and I'll do this thing at comic shows sometimes, and I end up doing it a little too much in San Diego. Well, I'll write people little small short stories and books that they buy, and that's always fun. Yeah. I always keep saying I'm going to do some prose one day, but there's too many comics to write first.
So, what is it about writing for comics that that is different? I mean, is there something that you can accomplish there that you simply couldn't do if all you had were words?
I think so. Comics are a really special medium that can do anything. Like, anything is possible. You were talking earlier about superhero comics and comics for kids and adults, and it's just a medium that's capable of so much, and it's being done out there by so many talented cartoonists. And so it's one of those things that I just love so much that getting to make it is amazing.
Kelsey, can you give me a sense of some of who those other talented cartoonists are that that Adam's talking about? Who else is doing sort of innovative or groundbreaking work in this area right now?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people who are from here that are doing pretty cool stuff, but I don't know, like, maybe I want to ask you guys that. I want to say me, but like, but that sounds really
Kelsey
weird.
All right. Well,
I don't
Kelsey,
know if you've been Kelsey to Jukebox Comics, but right.
There you go, Kelsey. Kelsey promoting her own artistic.
I don't know. I mean, because we this is not unusual, right? What's happening at this table right now? We do like hang out with a lot of people who like make comics in the area, so it's just like.
And I mean, you mentioned the scene, that's part of why you guys even moved here. Is it a big scene? Are we talking 10 people? Are we talking 200 people?
I would say that, I mean, I don't know. There's probably like maybe like 20 of us like floating around.
So not a big scene, but you get to know each other pretty well.
A lot of those people, though, should they decide to move away from Kansas City, still stay in touch. So it's almost like we have Kansas City cartoonists, but like all over the country. You know what I mean? Like doing different jobs.
What kinds of things are you working on, Kelsey?
Well, I've been typically working on like a lot of short stories or short form comics, which generally run, you know, anywhere between 10 and, you know, 30 pages. But I'm kind of at the beginning stages of trying to work on something long form, which I'm really excited about. But
can you give us a preview?
Oh, well, there is a short story that I published last year on Vice called Cannonball, and I'm basically working on an expansion on that, a long form.
I didn't know that's what that was. That's
awesome. That's what it is.
Oh, that's super
exciting, I didn't
Kelsey.
Know that you drew. I'm like, where are these drawings? I want to see them.
I've got some.
That'll be in the making of video. All right. So I guess I'm curious, you guys, about sort of how you think your work fits into the broader landscape of graphic novels. Do you think you're doing something different? How has that field changed since even since the 70s, where Kelsey tells us in some ways that the modern version of graphic novels get started? I mean, is it significantly different today than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
I think it's always evolving, but I think there's also always been, like, if you looked hard enough, there's always been those kinds of stories out there. I don't think Matt and I are doing any sort of particular book that's, you know, not being done, but we want to make the stories that we would like to read. And so that's just the general idea. It's like, as long as it's something that we would enjoy reading ourselves, you know?
Yeah. And it's kind of hard to break new ground in comics because they've been around for so long, and it's a really cheap medium to work in. So pretty much anyone can work in it. So there are so many people making so many different kinds of stories that, I mean...
And does that lead to real variations in quality as well?
Oh, of course. I mean, like anything, you know, if an amateur, you know, starts off making a comic, it can be really good for as how experienced they are. But, you know, comics are really hard and it takes a long time to sort of understand the form and to grow. And I still feel like I'm terrible at it for the most part.
Apparently those who make the nominations for these awards don't agree.
Oh, yeah, I guess I can.
You know, but there are still some things that I think are sort of I enjoyed getting to see this book. I feel like there's elements that are very classic as well as these things that are very different and new. I was attracted, for example, to the way you convey action. There's a fight scene where someone punches someone and it says in big capital letters, pop,
right,
next to their jaw. And I thought, well, that's like watching Batman on TV.
Yeah, I like throwing in those little cute things every now and again to, you know, just remind myself and the reader that, yes, this is a comic. But also, for the most part, we like stories that are very engrossing, and you kind of forget at times that you're reading a comic. Part of the reason we paced the book the way we did, which is a lot of dialogue-less panels, a lot of visual storytelling, was we wanted the reader to keep turning the page. And, you know, if we muddy it up with too many things happening in a panel, either visually or with dialogue, then you can lose that pace, which works for a lot of different kinds of comics. It just depends on the kind of story you want to tell. But for what we wanted to do, we just wanted to do something very simple as far as just mostly making it about the characters.
Yeah, speaking of the characters, I mean, Kelsey, maybe you can shed some insight on this. My understanding is that in the world of comics, it's a bigger deal when a person of color is a leading character or a queer character, or even women that at one time were not featured really much at all in leading roles, except perhaps as scantily clad, objectified characters.
Arguably still are.
And that's a question I have. I mean, does the world of graphic novels, the more extended versions, is it different in graphic novels?
I want to say yes. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with it's sort of that thing I was mentioning earlier about its sort of conception as being almost anti something else, or not necessarily anti, but a progression, or like pushing the boundaries of something else.
And graphic novels do that, you think, in a way that other forms of literature don't as much?
Oh, I mean, I don't know about other forms of literature. I'd say other comics, maybe. But, I mean, there are some who might argue that some of the most, you know, unique and like progressive stories are being told this way. And it might be because of what Matt was saying about like how all you need really is like a pen and paper, you know, and you can do it. But, and also you need like a lot of drive and time. And
right,
if you have that, then, you know, you have a story worth telling,
right,
you know, because you're not going to spend 5 years on a story that's not worth telling, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I guess that brings me to one other question, which is kind of the business behind graphic novels and the practicalities of making this work on a long-term basis. Obviously, there's going to be some breakout hits that people can make a living off of. But is it like writing in general? Very few people can really make a living at this?
For as many people that want to be in comics, there are very much less people professionally in comics. There are fewer who are sustaining themselves financially on comics. And I think that just has to do with basic commerce stuff. I mean, you know, like I said, the big two, Marvel and DC, those are really big companies with like licensed characters that have been around for a really long time.
I mean, and is that the gold standard? Is that every comic creator's dream?
If you like superheroes, it is. And if that's what you've wanted to do your whole life, you know, is draw Wolverine or the, you know, Superman or something, then yeah, that is definitely the gold standard.
That does not sound like your dream.
No, and it's not even like, oh, I don't want to do that, I'm a purist or anything. I would totally draw a superhero comic. But also, I mean, there's a lot of different stories out there that are really great that have nothing to do with superheroes that I really love. And so I like telling those kind of stories too.
Although, Adam, you've gotten a little bit into the superhero world, right?
Yeah. DC Comics did a writer's workshop where they invited a bunch of writers that they liked that hadn't worked for them yet to participate in this, I think it was 13 weeks online class. So every Wednesday we would have this sort of Skype session. And it was taught by Scott Snyder, who writes Batman. And I went into it thinking this will be a really good experience to learn something from Scott Snyder and meet a dozen other writers. Because I don't want to say I don't necessarily know a whole lot of writers of comics, but it's such a solitary medium. And you have to have so many projects going at once when you're writing. You don't have a lot of spare time to, cool, I'll look over that 6-issue thing you wrote.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So I was like, it'll be neat to meet other writers. But after doing the class and hearing Scott talk about superheroes and his love of it and that sort of thing, I did get a little bit interested. And I mean, I'm not saying I'm pitching for Batman or Superman, because vigilante stuff is still super weird to me, especially nowadays. It seems even
right.
more problematic. But they've got some... DC has some really weird superheroes, and so I've actually pitched two, or
so,
I've pitched
So we may
four,
see you break into the world of the big two.
It's possible. You know, it depends if I can tell the story I want to tell the way I would like to tell it. You know, as long as I'm still doing that, I don't feel like, you know, not to sound like 13-year-old me, but a sellout.
Well, I want to wish you both well, all three of you well in that. In fact, Adam Smith and Matt Fox, the authors of the book Long Walk to Valhalla, and Kelsey Roten, all of them in the comic creating world here in Kansas City. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you'd like to meet Adam and Matt, by the way, they'll be at this weekend's Comic Con at Bartle Hall. When Central Standard continues, we take a look at one of the true landmarks in the history of mental health care, Topeka's Menninger Clinic. It was the place where at least a few of the rich and famous came for treatment, and a worldwide leader in the science of psychoanalysis. What happened to it? I'm Brian Ellison. We'll find out when we come back.